It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live. Welcome to Just a Bit Outside with Stark and Massaro. I am your host, Ian Starkman, and I am joined by my co-host, Mike Massaro. Lots of great sports that we will touch on today, including a last-second Packers win, week three of the NFL and rookie QB struggles. The Ryder Cup was a blowout, the Blue Jays still hanging in for the wild card, and college football's cream rises to the top. But first, Mike, how was your sports week?
Not too bad. I didn't get up to too much. I was working this weekend, so early mornings, didn't get up to a whole lot over the last few days. Just really just watched the golf on Friday, Saturday. Not too much Sunday. Didn't really need to, but just watched the Ryder Cup and some good college football games on Saturday, NFL Sunday. So that's kind of what it is for me right now. It's just watching football pretty much for 2 days, and I absolutely love it.
It's almost like we're at that time where it's busy. There's a lot of sports about to start to intermingle, I guess, with baseball too, and football, NFL football, and golf's finishing up now with the Ryder Cup, and then we have hockey season starting soon. So yeah, it seems like there's a lot going on. It's tough to track and everything that's happening right now in the sports world. But you know, it was a busy weekend for me at my house. We had hockey tryouts, we had baseball practices. So I was bouncing around quite a bit from rinks to ballparks, just popping in and out to pick up another kid, get his gear on and get going. But I do have to say, on what I was just mentioning with you, Mike, it's a great era to be in that we are in right now as sports fans. I mean, we can track all the sports on our phones. You can even watch them on your phones if you're sitting in the car at a baseball diamond or up
getting
in the stands.
Getting a vaccine.
You never know when you're going to need it. And it's just great. You don't miss a thing while you're at the rink watching a bunch of four-year-olds just kind of trip and fall all over each other. You're still tracking sports. I mean, imagine being a sports fan in, let's call it, like the mid-90s. And you'd be gone all day, right? With the kids, the same thing. They got to go with their activities. You're taking them around. Maybe you have work stuff you got to do. You have to stop in at family or friends' place. And then you just get home and turn on SportsCenter at 11 to see what happened. I mean, and if you miss that or you fall asleep, you got to just wait till the newspaper comes in the morning to check the box scores. That must have been brutal to be a sports fan then.
Now, for you, though, the question I have for you is, how do you handle it? Because you are a guy who likes to PVR a lot of things due to your schedule. How do you prevent, I mean, aside from texting me and saying, don't tell me anything about the golf, how do you prevent yourself? Because it's so easy to get an alert from, you know, the score app or a team app that you follow, or someone randomly texts you and says, hey, did you see that big touchdown drive? Like, how do you police yourself?
Yeah. What I do is I turn off all my notifications on my phone. I contact the people that I usually talk about with that either sports team or sport, being golf, say I'm taping, don't mention it. The people that I bump into at rinks and ball diamonds that I know, I clearly say I'm recording the golf. Don't say anything. My wife doesn't follow or watch very much sports at all, so I don't need to worry about her spoiling anything to me. And then I just make sure all the TVs are off so I'm not walking in on something, and I have it set up. I've been pretty good. It's tough to put your phone away and not scroll through different apps to look at stuff, but I've kind of figured it out right now, and it's great. I mean, I was watching the Ryder Cup on delay last night, and I was hooting and hollering and cheering, and we'll get into it a little bit more in one of our T5s, but that's what kind of makes it good, is to watch things live. I know some people that check the scores but still go back and watch the game. I can't do that at all.
Yeah, I just, for me, it's so tough because, like, even something as simple as opening Instagram and you follow a team, it's like the first post, it's like big win. It's like, well, great. Now I don't need to watch a game, but I could just picture you at the rink. Stark, how's it going? I'm just going to stop you right there. Don't tell me what the goddamn score is. Okay. Now continue. I'm good.
Yeah, we can talk about anything else. On Saturday, actually, after going to two different rinks. I did have a nice little fun golf game with some buddies of mine that I golf with all year. And we played actually as a group of seven because it was pretty dead out there, which was great fun. I mean, we did get rained on a little bit, but we played this cool little game. It was called Snake. Not sure if you've heard of it. So whoever three putts becomes the snake. And you stay the snake until someone else three putts. And whoever's the snake after the 18th hole, well, you pay out to all the guys. So it was a fun game. I mean, we weren't really too worried about our scores. We were more focused on three putting, and some putts became pressure putts. But I was the snake for two holes. I three putted on one hole, and then I had it for the next two because no one else three putted. And I triple bogeyed both those holes because I was just so focused on other people and what they were doing and how they were putting. But it was nice to just play a little bit of a different game out on the golf course, play a different little style of match, which was great. Now, after the golf, I did go out to a bar for dinner and drinks with these guys, some of my good buddies. But, you know, it was my first time going out in a long time due to pandemic and other reasons. And I kind of got to be honest, and I know it's a thing that my buddies do bust my balls about, but I wasn't too geared up to go out, and I kind of changed on the amount that I do want to go out, and it just felt a little weird, and I felt a little off. You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I pre-pandemic, I didn't give a shit to go out. For me, it's... there's no lines in the basement to grab a beer, no lines for the washroom, nobody spilling anything on me. But yes, it's different. It's different right now.
I'm a sports guy. That's what I am. I don't watch a ton of movies. I watch a couple TV shows with my wife, but really I like to watch sports and follow sports. And I can do that in my basement with multiple yep. TVs going on. I can flip around to different games. I can track games that matter to me most. And I do enjoy that. I mean, obviously it's fun to get out with friends and hang out with them a bunch too. But I just wanted to call out that going out for the first time, as I'm sure a lot of listeners are experiencing now, it's going to feel a little weird if you haven't done it or if you haven't done it in a while. But it was still good. Got to see the Jays win at the bar, which was great. And then, I mean, Sunday, what a sports day and night. I was calling it rivalry night. I mean, we had US versus Europe. We had Yankees versus Red Sox, Packers, 49ers. I loved it. I mean, I was in my zone after missing a lot on Saturday, kind of being out of the house. I was back in my zone on Sunday to track everything. And it was perfect way to end the weekend.
NFL Sunday always delivers one way or another. Even if your team loses, it still delivers.
I know. And, you know, even if your fantasy team gets smoked by your co-host on the podcast, it's still a good day, right?
Hang on a minute now. Define the word smoked here, because I think as we head into Monday night, you're only 15 points ahead of me.
I think it's in the bag. I think, what do you got left?
It probably is. But I need to preface for the listeners out there before Stark goes on this tyrant of how he smoked me. Christian McCaffrey, who was my first overall pick, my top running back, goes down in the first quarter Thursday night.
Them's okay. The breaks, man.
AJ Brown, my top wide receiver, also goes down first quarter on Sunday. So my top two point producing positions, guys go down in the first quarter of their games. So you might win unless Pollard goes off tonight and CeeDee Lamb does nothing for you. You never know. I'm not expecting to win though.
But you did have the first overall pick. I was pick 11. But hey, Mike, you know what? People really don't care about our fantasy teams. And I'm sure we'll bring it up on how it finishes. You know, maybe check us out on Twitter. I'll let you know when I win for sure. But hey, stick around. Our T5 is coming up right after the break. What a way to end a great Sunday in the NFL with two of the most historic franchises playing on Sunday Night Football, and that is where we start with our T1. Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers had less than 1 minute and no timeouts to march down the field to set up the game-winning field goal over the San Francisco 49ers to improve to 2-1 with a 30-28 win. And Mike, I could hear you screaming all the way from Mississauga. What did you think of the game of the week?
Good finish, good start. Somewhere in the middle there, it kind of went off the rails for us. But I think the one thing I would preface for every game is, remember what I said after week one, everybody gets a little too excited, a little too upset. And I think there are some teams that have proven through weeks two and three that week one was not going to be kind of their way forward. And I mean, Pittsburgh and Buffalo are two prime examples of that, especially because they played each other in week one. But anyways, getting back to the Packers. Good response in week two, a great response to start last night, going up 17-0. A couple bad calls, bad defensive plays. Well, it all started with the kick return there, right after the touchdown. They put themselves in prime positioning. And then some bonehead decision-making. San Fran, ballsy call by Kyle Shanahan with 2 seconds left to run a play instead of taking what would have been the automatic three. Trey Lance comes in, runs in, they get seven, which was important because, you know, I think we were saying in our group, and you said it with John and I, that this game is going to be close. And at that point, it really wasn't. But for them to get seven and then get the ball back to start the second half, that really changed the momentum and made it an entirely different game.
It did. But you know what? As I said, it had that feeling the whole time. I mean, they're both good teams, really good teams, possibly could be great teams this year. And it started off great for the Packers. I mean, Rodgers, that first pass was, what, for 20 yards, 20-yard gain, and they were just flying down the field, didn't get the touchdown on the first drive. And it just looked like San Francisco wasn't sure how to handle the Packers' offense. You mentioned they were up, you know, 10-0 after the first quarter. I thought it was might be a landslide win. I mean, I was on San Francisco, so I was kind of a little bummed, like, ah, oh, this is going to be a blowout. But it was a quick turnaround. I mean, the kick return definitely helped. I mean, how about Crosby, be the kicker, being the one guy to tackle him at the end? I love when that happens. I love when the kicker is the last guy left, and you're like, oh, no, we are screwed here. But he got him. It was a great play, and San Francisco still was able to kind of march down. Juszczyk scores with 42 seconds left. To end the game, or to end the fourth quarter, I should say. And it might have been better if he just went down on the 2-yard line because he had the first down and he got hit. It wasn't like Green Bay was letting him go in. They hit him. He was almost about to go down. He turned and rolled and got in for the touchdown, and he left him with 42 to 37 seconds left. I mean, as a Packers fan, I'm pretty sure you were like, ah, oh, Rodgers will get this done.
Yeah, I was concerned, and I think I would have to listen back to the call, but I think that's what Al and Chris were saying on the call on NBC there, that San Fran shouldn't be hurrying to try and score here. You know, you want to try and get in with as least amount of time as possible. I mean, there's no guarantee they were going to score, but the way they were driving, chances were pretty good. And when they got in, 37 seconds, no timeouts. Thankfully, Adams was back into the game. If he wasn't there, I think it would have been a little more difficult, just because of the chemistry those two have. But I just kind of figure if we could get a couple decent plays off to either get to the sideline or kill the clock, which they're able to do. Mason Crosby is, you know, he's won a lot of games for the Packers over the years, and they needed to get within his range, though. Once you get past 50, it gets a little tough for anyone, especially with that pressure. But the guy's been doing it for 15 years, and he was awesome again for us.
I wasn't surprised. I was watching, and I was like, this is going to happen. He's going to get them down there, and they're going to get the field goal to win the game. I knew Rodgers would do it. We talked about quarterbacks last week and how some of them made some bad decisions. Mahomes, you know, Rodgers doesn't make those bad decisions. Doesn't get himself in situations where he's going to get sacked and lose a lot of yardage and have the clock run. He'll get rid of the ball if he needs to. Very smart out there. I think the Packers still have some question marks on defense. And I know you mentioned that as well, especially in the secondary. I felt like San Fran had a better chance throwing the ball down, you know, 15, 20 yards longer than anything short, and their run game, no. So I think the Packers really need to focus on that part of the defense. But when you got Aaron Rodgers, you got a chance to win every game. He was 23 for 33, 261 yards, two TDs, ho-hum, average game for him, gets the win. One thing I got to mention, though, his hair is out of control, eh? I think he looks like one of those Italian soccer players from the early 2000s, slick back, maybe put the bandana around it. I'm sure that's something you would rock back in the day, too.
The pandemic hair, kind of, I suppose. Mine was a little longer than would be, but no, I don't have a bra strap or anything in my hair holding my hair back.
But you know what? When you're Aaron Rodgers and you're playing that good, you can do whatever you want. Hey, well, while Rodgers was playing to win, week three in the NFL saw some young guns get their opportunities and some surprise teams make noise that will be in our T2. For most of the offseason, the talk of the NFL was this new young crop of QBs, and this week we got to see them all play. But it was not pretty, as Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones, and Zach Wilson all had games they hope to never remember. Mike, who was the biggest disappointment out of that group?
I think it would be easy to say Justin Fields, but I don't think that's entirely fair to him because, in my opinion, the Bears didn't put him in a position to succeed. Now, of course, you got to execute, but you know, he was kind of thrown in after an injury, and the recurring theme for a lot of these guys, I think at least four of the five, they have bad offensive lines. So a lot of them are running for their lives and not able to have a clean pocket and time to make decisions. And as a rookie, the game is coming fast for you. Eventually it'll slow down for these guys, but right now they're running for their lives, yeah. All of them.
Yeah. Fields, Lawrence, Wilson, they play on bad teams. Hello. They're awful. There's a reason why these guys were drafted high, but these teams are going to give these guys time to grow within the organization, build around them, get the O-line, as you mentioned, that they need to help them as they get grown in this league and eventually build winning teams. Now, Mac Jones, he's on a team that wants to win and expects to make the playoffs real soon, this year probably. He threw 51 times on Sunday. What a large number for a rookie quarterback making his third start. It was a loss to the Saints. He had one TD, three interceptions. I mean, Brian Hoyer, he's the backup there with the Patriots. If they decide to make the switch, they already let Cam Newton go. I don't know if they're going to be able to let Mac Jones keep going at this rate as the Patriots look lost.
The problem with New England, I mean, the one thing I will say Mac Jones's defense is his percentage completion right now is at 67, which is, you know, fairly solid. So a lot of the shorter throws he is making, he is completing them. It's when they start extending the field. But New England's biggest problem yesterday was they couldn't get a run game going. And, you know, when that is the case, you're forced to throw a lot. And that's what screws these guys up. I think Mac will be fine. They got a big one this Sunday night, so we'll see how he does there. But, you know, poor Justin Fields, man. 9 sacks. Oof. On Sunday. He got sacked 9 times by Cleveland. Like,
he was scrambling.
To the point, when you're not protected properly and you don't have the time, you're not going to be able to do anything.
No. And you know, moving from those young quarterbacks to established quarterbacks that are really making noise and you can see that they've grown, let's talk about the NFC West. Clearly the best division in football. Got the Cardinals and Rams, both 3-0. The 49ers, 2-1, but could have easily been 3-0 last night if they had finished off that comeback against the Packers. And I mean, don't sleep on the 1-2 Seahawks, who fell flat against the Vikings, but I love this division. You know, 4 p.m. games, most of them play, which is great. And they have exciting quarterbacks that know how to play the game, play it fast, high-scoring games, high-scoring teams. Offense is fun to watch, and that's what those young quarterbacks are going to strive to be like. But, I mean, the NFC West, it's the place to be right now in the NFL.
It really is. And, I mean, as somebody who, you know, saw his team play against Matt Stafford twice a year, we said on this podcast before just how good of a player he is and a great opportunity he's been given here in Los Angeles and how good of a person he is too. So you can't help but be happy for Matt Stafford and the situation he's in LA. I mean, he's produced. I mean, through 3 games, 70% completion, over 940 yards, 9 touchdowns, a 129 rating. He's really come into this team and taken the reins from Jared Goff. And, you know, they were trotting before. Now they're full out speed. But an impressive win yesterday on both sides of the ball over Tampa Bay. They, you know, rough game week two on the road, but that's fine. Early start for them on the East Coast. A big win over Tampa, the defending champs at home yesterday. And I believe they're playing Arizona this week. Battle of 3-0s. That'll be a hell of a game.
Yeah. And I mean, Stafford, you mentioned, got to be the happiest guy ever. Just get out of Detroit, you know, fresh look on life. You're in sunny LA. It's great. So they're living it up there in LA. Things are going great. Then you look at the Chiefs, right? It's not time to panic just yet for Kansas City, but I was worried at the start of the year that they would might have a little bit of a setback from the Super Bowl. I mean, now they're at 1-2, might be that early season wake-up call they needed. You saw Mahomes in the presser after his loss yesterday saying, hey, you know what? We still got a good team here. He's trying to say all the right things, all the things that we just saw Aaron Rodgers say after week one. It won't be easy. Their next seven games, they play four top teams. They play the Bills, Titans, Packers, and Raiders, who are combined 9-3. So they got to get going here to really put up a high number and have themselves a good spot going in the playoffs. But I think the Chiefs could still do it.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, not to use that, the old saying, but, you know, realistically, every team that plays Kansas City, they are going to be gunning for them, right? They want to give their best versions of themselves. I mean, that's kind of dumb to say because theoretically everybody should be doing that every Sunday. But when you're playing a team like Kansas City, you know you have to be on the top of your game in every facet, offense, defense, and special teams. And the Chargers, I mean, they kind of had their foot on them for a lot yesterday. And, you know, you give them these little opportunities to get back in and they assert themselves back into the game. Mahomes has made a couple bad decisions over the past couple weeks that have cost them with turnovers. But, you know, to your point, there's just too much firepower there for them to be written off.
Yeah, I think they'll turn around too. I'm not writing them out, but I mean, just be careful with some of these spreads coming out on Kansas City the next little while. Be interesting to see how Vegas handles that. And then lastly, just in the NFL, just touching on undefeated teams. We got five of them still. Raiders and Broncos, same division. Cardinals and Rams, same division. Panthers, 3-0. Any surprises you like out of those group?
I mean, I think we said it last week and we'll say it again this week. Who would expect the Denver and Vegas to be on top of the West right after a couple weeks? I mean, look, Denver's played the Giants, Jaguars, and Jets. Okay, I mean, it's no real surprise they're 3-0. Raiders have had two overtime games, went into Pittsburgh. Impressive game there in week two. So we'll see what the Raiders are about this week. They go to LA to play the Chargers. So that'll be a good divisional matchup. Broncos got Baltimore coming in. Then they got to go to Pittsburgh. So we're going to get an idea of what these teams are really about over the next couple weeks. I think LA and Arizona, they're going to keep battling it out. They're probably the closest version to what an undefeated team should be. And Carolina, I mean, their defense is playing real well, but they're going to be tested over the next couple of weeks without McCaffrey. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll really see who the top teams are in the next few weeks here in the NFL. But speaking of undefeated, we almost saw a full sweep on Sunday in our T3. The Ryder Cup concluded on Sunday with the Americans winning 19-9 over the Europeans, who could not get into a groove on Friday and Saturday, which put them in such a hole for the singles matches that DJ and the boys decided to set a record for the highest points in the Ryder Cup. Now, we should start this segment with a little flashback to last week when I told you the Americans would win easily, and I even predicted it as an 18-10 final, which I think you laughed at me when I said that, Mike. And it was so bad that late on Sunday, I was actually rooting for Europe to win a match just to get to the 10 points to have a chance at my plus 2,000 bet of 18-10 hitting. I mean, the U.S. won day one, 6-2. They won day two, 5-3. It was just a smoke show for the Americans this weekend at the Ryder Cup.
I laughed because I knew it was going to be more. It was the old old reverse jinx. Yeah, I mean, Friday morning, this thing was over.
It was.
You know, I was going to text you because I misread my score app as I opened it in the morning, and I saw, because it looked like the score was beside the European name. I'm like, oh, these guys are like three up in four of the matches already. Good call, Stark. And then I looked, oh, it's the highlighted team. So they're actually down in all four games. So I'm glad I didn't text you. But I mean, yeah, look, they, every question that was posed to them was answered. I mean, you got Bryson and Brooksy seeming like they're the best of friends. There, I think there was a t-shirt Bryson was wearing from like Step Brothers. So they did what they needed to do, and they put the differences aside, and they, the chemistry was through the roof.
It was. It was. In a game where it's really an individual game, it did seem like there was some chemistry and all the guys were saying the right things. Dustin Johnson was the star. He went 5-0, and he's just so calm in the midst of all the hoopla that comes with this event. Bryson was a monster. He was feeding off of the crowd, and they were actually cheering for him and really rooting for him. And I think he liked that. I think he liked that feeling. In his singles match on Sunday, he was playing Sergio Garcia, and he hit the green on the par four with an absolute bomb, and the place went nuts. Then he knocks in about the 15-footer for eagle. I mean, they might as well have just given him the match then. He played great. He finished 2-0-1 after not playing in either of the alternate shots. So some good decisions by Captain Stricker to keep him out of that. I mean, Morikawa, Cantlay, a couple of rookies in this event. They didn't lose. Both of them went 3-0-1. It just seemed like all the decisions the Americans made were the right decisions.
Yeah, everything that they put on paper, from matchups to pairings to, you know, pretty much everything you've touched on, it just made sense. And I think the biggest question going in was who was going to be able to play with Bryson. And his combo with Scottie Scheffler, they were great together over Friday and Saturday. And yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I know we harp on Bryson a lot in the past, but I felt good for him after Sunday's single play when he was doing his interview with he was doing his television interview and everybody's chanting DeChambeau, like, I know we have fun with him, but he, you know, he deserved that. He was great, and it's nice to see.
I think all that Brooksy stuff's going to end now. People will be on his side as well. For Europe, John Rahm, he was the star, 3-1-1. While Sergio played decent, but I mean, he was playing with Rahm, so he got a couple of those wins. But after that, everyone on Team Europe had a losing record. It just wasn't their week. The course just didn't set up well for them, considering people thought it was a Lynxy style course. They had trouble on some of the longer holes, a lot of long par fours. And when it came down to it, it was all putting, and the Americans really putted well.
Yeah, for sure. It a thorough beating in every aspect. But I will say, after the conclusion of this event, I think I now have a new ranking for most dislike on tour.
Okay, who's that?
Justin Thomas.
What? Why?
It was enough for me. All the fist pumping and yelling and taunting, slamming a beer on the tee. Like, that's come awesome. On. No.
Oh, come on. What do you think Poulter does when he's fist bumping after every putt as well?
What do you think of the guy that had to go and replace the divot on the tee because of him? He dented it with a can.
What about the guy that had to replace the divot when Shane Lowry threw his putter up in the air when he made the putt on Saturday to only be down by like 6 or 7? Come on. Give me a break.
I didn't see that. That must have been a bathroom break for me.
That was a bad take. But hey, I got a couple notes I just want to go over about the Ryder Cup. And I love the Ryder Cup, so I wanted to call them out. First of all, the first tee, I don't know if there's a better one spot sporting event to really be at. I mean, it's electric when those guys walk out of the tunnel and they hit their first shot. The crowd is going crazy. I mean, it's even better when you can have a mix of European and American fans. I thought that was so cool. I love match play. These guys just play different. They attempt to make different shots. When they putt, they go for it every time. Doesn't matter. That's why you see all those 20-foot long bombs. They make them pretty regularly. They need more tournaments with match play. I think I really like it. Find a way, PGA, to get it into the mix. Next thing, gimmies. Get rid of them. I vote we don't need them in the Ryder Cup. Too much back and forth, you know, like, oh, well, you gave me that once, you got to give me this one. No, putt it out. You guys are pros, make every putt. If you need to make a putt to win a hole, make the putt. I hate when they're like, well, now it's a tight match, so I can't give you that 2-footer. put it out. I don't want to see that anymore. I thought that was weak. Golf TV. Okay. Again, I'm a TV guy, sports guy here. Brutal. They just need to figure out a better way of showing us what's going on in the golf course. We got 12 singles matches on Sunday all over the golf course. They go and cut to one guy shooting. There's no box in the top that says it's John Rahm shooting his second shot on the fifth hole and he's down two strokes. Like, I can't track all of this. So you guys need to do a better job of putting it in the graphics so we know what's going on. I mean, you got one job. Let people know what's happening. There's too much going on out there that once you cut to a golfer, you need to tell us what's going on there. That's my complaint about that. And my final thought on the Ryder Cup. It looked like the U.S. partied so hard last night. From what I saw on Twitter, Instagram, even on some of the TV stations, the only thing I don't like, Mike, is the two teams party together after the Ryder Cup at a joint party. And they're dancing, having drinks. Are you kidding me? Europe, you got smoked. Why do you guys want to stick around and party? Get on a plane and get the hell out of there. Who would want to hang out with the guys that just whooped their asses all weekend?
They were in Wisconsin, to be fair. It's a great place to have some fun. But was it predominantly Golf Channel doing?
Golf Channel, NBC, they own the same thing. But I don't want to call them out. Other channels do the same thing, too.
But I mean, you know, when you don't have Jim Nantz doing it, that's always, you know, he's heavy on NFL right now. So that's always a downfall from a broadcast perspective. Because for me, I think he's the best broadcaster, sports broadcaster. He's amazing.
He is. But golf, it needs to be visual. Those guys can say it as much as they want, but you need it on the screen.
I agree with everything you said, because I found myself asking the same things. Well, what they would flash up eventually, like all square or down one, but you never really knew every shot what was happening. So I agree with you there. I like it. I think, you know, Ryder Cup's always a lot of fun. I'm looking forward next year with President's Cup. Hopefully we'll have a few Canadians on the team.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It'll be interesting to see how they carry this momentum from a U.S. perspective into that tournament. And hopefully the internationals with, it's funny to say Canada is an international, but that's where they're placed. So, look, a good tournament. I think the U.S. fully deserved it. And we'll see what happens next year.
Great way to end the golf season. But from fall golf to fall ball, as we move to our T4. Last week, I proclaimed the Blue Jays would make it to the World Series. Then they lost 2 of 3 to the Tampa Bay Rays and split with the Twins and now sit one game behind the Red Sox for the second wild card spot. Now listen, the Blue Jays still control their destiny in my mind. They got the Yankees for 3 this week and it's a must-win series. Sweep would be even better. But the Jays have the day off on Monday, so they were able to set up their pitching rotation for this series, and I love what they've done. So you got Ryu going in game one on Tuesday night. Wednesday, you got Barrios versus Cole. What a matchup that's going to be. And then on Thursday, you got Ray. Now, what this actually does for the Blue Jays is not only set them up well against Yankees, who obviously are the team, one of the teams they're chasing, but it sets them up right for a potential tiebreaker and wild card game. If there is a tiebreaker game and you need to play it, you got Barrios, who's ready to go for Monday, 5 days rest after his pitch on Wednesday. And then for a wild card game on Tuesday, you got Ray set up for that one as well. They're all set. They just need to get the wins. 5 of 6 this week gets you to 92, the magic number we've been talking about for a month. And I think they're set, ready to do it. I think their offense will roll this week.
I saw Mr. Arashmadani's tweet about the rotation setup. So that was something I kind of marked down too, because like you said, that's important and it kind of gives you a look ahead. And then obviously, I guess Manoah would be pitching against Baltimore. And then they'll go from there. I think important to note too, capacity increase for this series. Yep. So the government's increased capacity, what was it, 15 to 30 now? So that will make a difference. I think, you know, if this team wasn't where they were right now, I don't think you're going to be getting 30,000, but there's a very good chance, especially with the Yankees. Yankees always draw regardless of the time of year or the situation. But, you know, they'll do well to get the crowds here for the next 6 games. For New York, sweeping Boston 1-0 now. They got Tampa after Toronto. Boston goes to Baltimore and Washington for their six. So an easy road for them. So, you know, really got to get the Yankees here in these three.
Listen, if you're a Blue Jays fan at the start of the year playing in Dunedin and they said, yeah, hey, we got six games left. We're one out of wild card. We got the Yankees at home and then the last place Orioles, you would take it. This is playoffs in baseball already. That's why they play 162. People complain about it. They don't expand the amount of playoff teams. Well, it's because they want to make the last couple weeks of the year exciting, and that's what it is. We saw it last week. I think the intensity of that Rays series, it was good for this young team. But then to go into Minnesota was a bit of a letdown. Losing the first two of that series could eventually be costly to lose those two games against a poor team. They only scored three runs in the first two games against the Twins. That's unacceptable. They followed it up with 11 in the next two to show their offense was back. And hopefully that builds into this Yankee series. They need to score big, have the strong pitching. I think that's their game plan here, is to just smash the ball against the Yankees. And the Yankees are probably wanting to do the same thing in this series. But I want to go back, Mike, to that Rays series, if we could. I want to touch on the Kevin Kiermaier and the data card incident, if you don't mind. Quick recap. So game one of the series, Jays and Rays. Kiermaier slides into home plate. He was tagged out by Alejandro Kirk, but his data card kind of fell out of his sweatband. Now, catchers have these data cards. They everything about every batter on the opposing team that they need to know, pitches they might want to throw for that batter. It's all on this little, you know, little band on his hand, similar to what quarterbacks wear. And it fell out, landed right on Kiermaier's lap. So here's my thoughts on it. He picked it up and took it back to the dugout. One, nothing wrong with him picking it up. It's there. How can you pass up on that info? Would you tap your teacher on the shoulder and say, oh, hey, Mr. Johnson, you dropped the answers to the exam, so I think you should take these back? No, you're not going to. It's competition. Take that thing back to it. Now, having said that, once the Jays knew that it was gone, Charlie should have stood up, marched right over to their dugout, demanded it back, and said, if you don't give it back, we're having at it here. We're plunking every single batter after that. And then the retaliation couldn't really happen in game two. It was a close game. Obviously, the Jays needed to win it, and they did. I have no problem with hitting him in game three. It was right on the numbers. It wasn't around the head. Move on. But now it looks like we got this Rays-Jays rivalry that hopefully we might even see in this playoffs, but definitely down in the future, these guys are going to play a ton. What did you think? Did you think it was a bad move taking the card?
No, I agree with you. You know, if you're gifted that kind of opportunity, I mean, you know, teams have done far worse, as we've seen over the last few years in the sport. So taking something that falls into your lap. Now, I mean, if the Jays guy knew and called him out, hey, give me that back, and he didn't, then that's a different story. But I mean, he subtly takes it back. Hey, here we go. And the retaliation is acceptable. You got a receipt, you get it back, right? That's the way things go in sports. So, yeah, like you said, it sets up for a very exciting potential playoff series, provided the Jays get to that point. There's a very good chance they will. And you know that storyline is going to come up 100%.
Oh, yeah. You got to love the AL East. It's the best in baseball. But hey, from the pros to the college ranks, we find our T5. College football this weekend had the big dogs playing mostly easy competition. But now we are starting to have debates on who should be the number one team in the nation between Alabama and Georgia, as these two teams have pulled away as the favorites. Mike, which way are you leaning?
I think I said last week, you know, for me, the more complete, the more impressive team probably is Georgia. But until Alabama is knocked off of their top throne, they stay number one. That's the way these things work, right? It takes into account last year, but also what they're doing this year. And until they have a loss, there's no conversation to be had, right? Bama stays number one.
Of course, this season, after everything that kind of happened in the offseason with Texas and Oklahoma possibly moving out of the Big 12, it's all about the SEC again. It's going to come down to these two. I still believe it's Alabama right now, like you mentioned, and it will stay that way until they eventually face off in potentially the SEC championship game. Georgia still has Arkansas, Florida, and Auburn, all ranked teams. It'll be important not only to win those ones, but prove that they can be dominant in those games. Bama's got a little bit tougher. They got Arkansas and Auburn, but they also got Ole Miss and Texas A&M, all ranked teams. Texas A&M had a bad loss this past weekend, but their paths are to meet in the title game. I expect them both to get there. I expect them to keep rolling the way they are. Their past couple weeks, Georgia, Bama, just blowout wins in the 60s and 70s with 0 points against. I mean, come on. These are clearly the best two teams in college football.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, after that, as of right now, I think it would be hard to say with confidence who the other two teams are going to be in the playoffs, because I think it's wide open. You have a ton of teams that haven't been defeated, but I don't think there's any one team that is truly unbeatable. Bama came close against Florida a couple weeks ago. You know, Georgia really hasn't been tested. I guess you could say the Clemson game in theory, a 10-3 game one, but fast forward a couple weeks from now, you know, Clemson right now is 25th. In the AP poll, Georgia's second. That game ain't going to matter in a couple weeks from now.
No, and I think Clemson's done. Like, let's stop talking about it. I'm glad they're done, too. I mean, they got to be done for the year. They struggled from game one versus Georgia, as you mentioned. Everyone had them ranked. Like, they would bounce back. It's time to move on. They're done. For me, the other two teams I'm liking right now to get into the playoff competition, or conversation, I should say, Oregon. They're playing great. What a team. They keep winning. They win big. I know they're in the Pac-12, not as much competition. I think they'll be there. I think they'll be undefeated by the end, and they'll be sniffing around for sure. They got to be considered. Oklahoma, I keep waiting for them just to knock it out of the park, but they're worrying me. This is a team I had locked into the playoffs early on, and of course, my pick to win the Heisman, Spencer Rattler, he hasn't looked too good. But that's two games in a row that they've looked sloppy. Now, they're wins, but sloppy wins. So I'm not sure who else to maybe move up into that, you know, those 7, 6, 5 teams that are pushing for the top four.
Yeah, I think Oregon, they stay undefeated throughout the season. I don't see how you don't put them in the top four, especially after beating Ohio State, regardless of where Ohio State finishes this season. Oregon, you know, has proven that they deserve at this point, unless there's some big change, that they are probably a playoff team. After that, I mean, yeah, I think it's still way too early to determine who that fourth team is. You know, right now Penn State is fourth, but they've been tested and they haven't looked great. They have a good defense, but offensively there's some questions there. Iowa, you know, was tested against Colorado State. They got some conference games coming up that could push them out of the top five. Oklahoma, have you touched on? Big one this week. I'll probably talk about a little later. 7th-ranked Cincinnati Bearcats against the 9th-ranked Notre Dame Fighting Irish. That could, you know, be the nail in the coffin for one of those teams' playoffs aspirations. So, like I said, there's so much movement here. We've seen so many different results and upsets through the first few weeks. I'm not confident picking anyone truly past Bama and Georgia, maybe Oregon.
And of course, Notre Dame smoked your boys, the Wisconsin Badgers, at Soldier Field on Saturday. Good night, Badgers. But I'm going to give you some love now as we move into our weekly NFL picks. In week 3, Mike had himself a week, winning 3 of the 4 matchups. He had Carolina, New Orleans, and Green Bay. I only had the Rams. So that moves our season series now. Mike is leading 7-5. I have first pick this week, but here are the games we are going to be selecting from. We have the Thursday nighter, Cincinnati -7.5 versus Jacksonville. The 1 o'clock on Sunday is Dallas -4.5 versus Carolina, undefeated Carolina. The 4 o'clock game is the Rams -6 against Arizona. And then the Sunday nighter is Tom Brady and the Buccaneers -6 going back to play at New England. So I'm going to go first. And I'm going to go right to the Sunday nighter because I think Tom is going to shove it down Bill Belichick's throat. -6 is nothing. He'll probably win this by 2 touchdowns and maybe even take the 4th quarter off. I'll take the Bucs -6.
I'm going a little risky here, Stark. I'm going Thursday nighter since it's been good to me. I'm picking the Jaguars to cover. They showed a couple flashes throughout the course of yesterday against Arizona, but if they're going to ever make a response, it's got to be against Cincinnati. Not to take anything away from the Bengals, but I just, you know, I don't love that 7.5 spread, so I'm taking the Jaguars.
Yeah, odd number. And you know, it'll be interesting. Again, this is Monday when we pull these odds. It's fun to see how these change so much, but we're locked in on these numbers. But make sure you track those, follow along as they move. I'm going to go with a team that I really like, and they struggled early in the first half this week, but then pulled it together in the second half and even covered the number for my lock. I'm going back. I'll go with the Arizona Cardinals +6 against the Rams. 6 points. I'll take the Cardinals.
Okay. So I'm picking again off of a team I haven't seen 3 weeks. But you know what? I think the injury to McCaffrey is going to be a lot for them to overcome. If Dallas, I mean, again, we're recording Monday, so they play the Eagles in the week 3 Monday nighter, so they could have 2 wins after this. But I still like Dallas at home, -4.5 against Carolina. And that'll be a good test for the Panthers to see what they're about.
Nice. So to recap, I have the Cincinnati Bengals -7.5. And Mike's got the Jags. I got the Carolina Panthers +4.5. Mike's got the Cowboys. I got the Arizona Cardinals +6 while Mike has the Rams. And then I got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers -6 while Mike has the New England Patriots. So that wraps up our T5 and our NFL picks. We have a short break, and then we will discuss some of our favorite people in your boy. This week, we bring back one of our favorite games called Your Boy. Mike and I will discuss someone from the sports world that might not be getting a lot of love, but in our mind is doing a great job and is your boy. Mike, we will start with you. Your boy is Christian McCaffrey, who broke the hearts of many fantasy football fans with an early injury in week 3 that saw him register just 6 fantasy points. Mike, should your boy McCaffrey still be a top player?
He should. I was very excited when I got the first overall pick because I knew right away who my number one pick was going to be in our pool this year, and it was Christian McCaffrey. I can't tell you the amount of trade offers I've received since Thursday night from people wanting him. Apparently, you know, he's not good enough to be on my team, but everybody else still wants him. And the offers I've gotten are almost insulting. I'm not going to get into them. But Christian McCaffrey on my bench is worth more than what I was being offered. Today, Matt Rhule, the Panthers head coach, came out and said he is not going to be put on the IR, which indicates he should be back within 3 weeks. That gives me some confidence. I do need to get a couple wins under my belt. But I think the upside for Christian McCaffrey is way too high. He was a second-ranked running back in 2018, had an even better 2019. And last year, he only got 3 games in, but at that pace, from a fantasy perspective, he was averaging about 25 points a game. If you're in a PPR league, the guy gets catches. He gets probably close to 300-400 touches in a regular season. So for me, I think he comes back, he'll get back to doing what he's doing. It's a hamstring. It's nothing major structure-wise that is going to cause him recurring problems. Now, the hamstrings are tricky. He's got to be careful with that. But if they don't view this as an IR-worthy placement, I think he's back within 2 weeks and gets back to business for the Panthers.
Let's remember, the Panthers are 3-0.
Right.
They need to start thinking a little bit longer and ahead, and maybe resting him might be the right choice because you want him to become back healthy and be ready for a strong push in November, December, right? So might be a smart decision to rest him, but might hurt your fantasy team. But Mike, who's my boy?
Your boys are the boys, I should say, are the umpires of Major League Baseball. We've seen some poor decisions, terrible missed strike zone calls throughout the week. Is this the time of year for this to be happening as we get ready for the playoffs?
it's time to make the call to the bullpen and bring in the robo umpires for the balls and strikes only. Keep the crusty old umpires behind home plate to call fair foul balls or if a player is going to be thrown out at home plate. I mean, we all watch baseball games on TV. We have the square. We know exactly where the ball crosses the plate, but we rely on a guy who's crouching behind the catcher to call balls and strikes. Seems way too old school. Like, imagine in hockey, we saw the review of the puck crossing the line, but didn't tell the referee, or letting the zebras in football determine a fumble. I mean, we have the technology to see these plays and reverse them and make the right call. We have the technology to figure out if a ball is a ball or a strike. Too many big games in the last week have been hurt by bad strike zones. The time is now to catch up on technology and hire my boys, the robot umpires. Let's get them in. All you need is a little watch on the umpire's wrist or some sort of device in his ear. Tell them it's a ball, it's a strike. That's it. He calls it. We're done with. We can move on. We all see it on the screen. You can even put it on the Jumbotron. Let's get this going now so we don't debate whether, well, this umpire strike zone's different than this one's. It's ridiculous that we still do this in baseball.
Fair enough. Where are they going to call him, though? Because they can't call him Blue.
Just call him Robo.
Okay. Oh, Robo. Yeah, okay. Okay, that works. That works.
Mike, your final boy is the head coach of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, who is now the winningest coach in the school's history, even after losing a few wins to a sanction violation. Mike, does your boy Brian Kelly deserve to stay on with the Irish, even if he doesn't have the playoff success?
I loved his quote going into, I believe it was going into this weekend's game, and someone asked him, you know, you were one win away from setting the school record, which was held previously by Newt Rockne, who coached Notre Dame from 1918 through 1930. It was 105, so they were tied. And he just said, basically, well, I'll be remembered as a guy who has the most wins, but no national championships. It was something to that extent. And I really liked that approach because it's true, right? Notre Dame is a program that expects success. But I think it's important to highlight his accomplishments. He replaced Charlie Weiss as head coach in December 2009, so ahead of the 2010 season. He's been there for 12 years, 106 wins now after beating Wisconsin, 5-5 in the bowls. Took him to the national championship for the 2012 season, so it was January 2013 where they lost to Bama. Since then, they've been to two playoffs. You know, for me, I think he's done a lot of good things with this program as an independent. Last year playing the ACC because of COVID. You know, they've only had one losing season under him, and I think he's done a really, really good job. I had the opportunity actually to meet him. Didn't expect it. I was at the TSN studios one day waiting to go on to do a radio hit with a TFC player, and the producer that was escorting us around, he's like, oh, would you like to meet Brian Kelly, Notre Dame head coach? And I was like, what the hell? Yes. So, really, really nice guy when we met briefly. So I've always had a lot of time for him and Notre Dame. You know, they're always a program I think everybody keeps an eye on and hopes to see them do well.
But sidebar, don't you think it's time? I mean, especially if the NCAA goes to some sort of super conference, these guys need to make a choice and jump in instead of being independent. I get it for the money of TV, but I think it's time they join a conference to really bring them up a level.
Yeah, I think they will. I you know, to your point about the money, NBC pays them a lot of money for their television deal, so they're set there. But I think if we're going to continue to see this trend of super conferences or, you know, reorient, however we want to describe it, I think eventually Notre Dame is going to join a conference. Where, who knows? But, you know, I think Brian Kelly's done a real nice job. And I mean, you know, to his credit, I think he took the high road there with the comments he made about having the record now. But, you know, a massive record at a big program that deserves to be celebrated. Stark, your boy is Alexander Ovechkin. The 36-year-old Russian superstar is 164 goals away from catching Wayne Gretzky and the all-time goal lead. How easy is it going to be for him to do it?
The great one versus the great eight. I love that debate. I love the way it's going to be set up. 164 goals seems like a lot. It does. But my boy turns 36 this September, just signed a five-year deal, negotiated himself, doesn't even need an agent, barely speaks English, did it no problem. Who needs lawyers? The great eight needs about 33 goals per year to surpass Wayne Gretzky. And we all know he does that number in his sleep. Let's not forget, he'd be a lot closer to Wayne, but he started his career 1 year later due to the lockout. That's about 40 goals, let's call it. There was the lockout in 2013, so they missed about 34 games. That's another 20 goals, let's call it. 2019 was cut short about 14 games. That's 19-20 because of the COVID issues. That's another eight goals. And then last year was only a half a year, so he scored 24. Let's add another 25 on top of that. His number would be a lot closer to Wayne right now if that hadn't happened throughout his career. He's already got his Stanley Cup. He only plans on scoring goals. He'll get to his favorite spot on the power play, feed him the puck, and he can smash it in, even if he starts to slow down on his speed. That's not his game. His game is shooting, and shooting the puck a lot and hard. And he could do that well into his 40s. I don't see it being that much of an issue. I think he'll get to that number. Don't get me wrong, Gretz is my boy too. I think he's obviously the best player ever. Tell people that all the time. Hate that he killed the Leafs back in 93. Different story. But I think Ovechkin, he'll be the king of the goals here. He deserves to be the best goal scorer of all time. And it's only a matter of time before he beats Gretzky's record. And it's going to be fun to watch.
Nice. I remember when we were growing up, I kind of think the rivalry was Gretzky-Lemieux. Whereas the kids, I mean, the kids kind of had Crosby Ovechkin. Where I'm assuming you were on the Gretzky train.
I actually was on Mario Lemieux.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah,
I thought he was amazing to watch. He had silk mitts. He was so good that way. And he wore 66. I love the number six. I even wore 66 a couple times. And I just thought that the way he played was so smooth and effortlessly. He dominated games. Loved watching Mario.
Yeah. I remember that game when he came back from cancer and
against the Leafs.
Yeah. Unfortunately it was against the Leafs, but just what he did, like just a very special player. And, I agree with you.
I know. Although everyone who's older than me tells me, Bobby Orr was better than Gretzky. So the debate goes on. But hey, each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. Last week, Mike had Wisconsin, and again, they lost big, this time to Notre Dame. Well, I gave you the Arizona Cardinals to cover, and they did. So, Mike, I got the tee. I will go first. If you don't mind, step to the side. And my pick is this Saturday, October 2nd. Yes, October. We're already into October. I'm on the number 14 Michigan Wolverines -1 at -110 right now against Mike's down and out Wisconsin Badgers. It's an in-conference game and are usually close, but Michigan will win, and they'll win by more than one. So get that bet in right now.
I can't say I disagree with you, man. I'd like to, but I really can't. I'm going to stick to college football as well. And on Saturday, it's funny you say October. It's hard to believe that. But anywho, the 7th-ranked Cincinnati Bearcats head to the Golden Dome to play the 9th-ranked Fighting Irish. After seeing what they did to my guys in Soldier Field and speaking about my appreciation, admiration for the job Brian Kelly's done, Cincinnati's 2.5-point favorites. I'm saying Notre Dame covers that, probably even gets the win. I think there's been a lot of question marks about them and just how good of a 4-0 team are they. This is their biggest test of the year, and I think at home they will respond and get the win. So Notre Dame covers.
For any of you that don't know Mike, he honestly is the nicest, big heart. He's just the nicest guy. And you can tell that in his picks because it's always a homer pick. It's always a pick that's just tugging at his heart and he needs to follow it. I mean, I'm rooting for you on this one, Mike. I'm rooting for you on this one. I don't know if I'll follow it or not, but I'm rooting for you. I think Notre Dame can get it done. I love it. You're such a great guy.
Wake up the echoes, baby.
Yeah, we want to hear from you. Make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show. And do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. I've got lots of friends telling me. They're telling friends and coworkers. So please do the same. We really appreciate it. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts.
Can't lose.
Oh, yeah.